Al-Anon speaker meeting for the 2013 Atlanta Roundup. Few announcements that I get to do and try to be as fun as the lady was last night. She's good. She was really good. There may be some of you who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity. I'm going to have to separate you. Okay. With personal anonymity. In any form of press, radio, films, TV, internet, and other electronic media. If so, we respectfully ask that no Al-Anon, Alateen, or AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published broadcast or web-posted reports of our meeting. The assurance of anonymity is for families of alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us to place Al-Anon and Alateen principles above personalities. So now let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. So I've asked my friend Elaine to read the steps and Lynn to read the traditions.
My name's Elaine.
Hi.
12 steps. Because of their proven power and worth, AA's 12 steps have been adopted by almost word for word. A way of life appealing to all people of goodwill, of any religious, faith, or of none. Note the very power of the words. 1. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Became entirely ready for God to remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lynn.
Hey, Lynn.
These are the 12 traditions. These guidelines are the means of promoting harmony and growth in Al-Anon groups and in the worldwide fellowship of Al-Anon as a whole. Our group experience suggests that our unity depends upon adherence to these traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. 5. Each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. 6. Our family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our names to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. 7. Our group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, the Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and TV. We need regards with special care the anonymity of all AA members. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Elaine. So one thing that wasn't on my announcements is immediately after the meeting, when we close with the Lord's Prayer, then Barbara will be going across the hall into the learning room, similar to what we did last night if you were here, that you can come over and greet her and thank you for sharing with us. So I think now we get to announce our speaker. So, you know, there's something that in Al-Anon, you know, in AA, we don't have heroes, we don't have leaders, we don't have a queen, we don't have a president, but, you know, we have people that we respect and that have been around a long time and that have touched a lot of people's lives. And, you know, just looking through the room, and if you're from Atlanta and your family members are from Atlanta, more than likely you or your family member's been touched by someone she's touched or her husband had touched. So, you know, we're very honored to have her with us. I'm very honored to have her in my life. So she always comes from a place of love. And for those of us that have received it, it doesn't always feel like that. I have one story in particular, if you want to know, I can tell you. But she always comes from a place of love. And that's the difference in hearing something that's hard to hear, and hearing it from her, and hearing it from somebody that's coming from ego and self-righteousness. And that's not what she does. She comes from love. So I once heard somebody announce somebody that if love had legs, it'd walk like this. I give you Barbara.
I'm Barbara, and I'm a member of a worldwide fellowship called Al-Anon Family Groups, and I'm already crying. I'd like to thank the committee for me being here today. It wasn't something I wanted to do. I said no to it twice. because I don't like doing this. This isn't what I do. I'd rather sit with you and talk to you on a one-on-one. I'd rather come to your house and have coffee and sit in your kitchen and talk to you than do this. And I don't do it in Atlanta. I do it out of town on occasion, but never here. So that's real interesting. I have people that have known me for quite a while who've never heard me speak because I don't want to. I love the Atlanta Roundup. When my husband and I moved to Georgia in 1984, the Atlanta Roundup was a place that we came, and we hadn't registered. And for those of you who've been around a while, you know George and Marge. And George snuck us into the Atlanta Roundup. We didn't pay that first year. And I've been paying for me and somebody else ever since. Because you got to make it right. You just got to make it right. And I love the Atlanta Roundup. Now, the Atlanta Roundup has not always been Al-Anon friendly. And I'm proud to say that they are friendly today. And I thank you for that. And if somebody will send this CD to John Holmes, I'd appreciate it. Had to do that. That was fun. Every once in a while, you need to give an old-timer a zinger, you know? You just, they need it. Make sure they're awake. I grew up in the disease of alcoholism. Now, my father never admitted the fact that he was an alcoholic, but I'm of the theory if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck. And he was an alcoholic. Alcoholism killed him. And in growing up in that home, it was physically and mentally abusive. And I learned some things in that home. I learned how to lie to protect myself. And I also learned that I would never allow a man to ever hit me again. And that's true. But when you grow up in that kind of home, you either marry an abuser or you become an abuser. I stand before you a reformed husband beater. I had been kicked out of more bars, never having had a drink, for attacking my husband. I decked him in broad daylight, broke his glasses, knocked his tooth out, and stood over him and said, "Get up, I'm not done." That's the kind of person I am. There's no coming from love there. Out of that marriage, I had two wonderful children. I love my children dearly. Somebody said to me today, "Was there anything good about your first husband?" And I had to think about it. And I came up with the fact that he was good at math. And that was about it. Because, you see, I married a man who was an alcoholic, a drug addict, a gambler, and a womanizer. Now, I don't know about you ladies in here, but I have a line. And other women's that line. You cross that line, you're going to get hurt. He got hurt and she got hurt. And I left the next day. Because I knew something bad was going to happen. It probably wasn't going to happen to me. And I would have been in jail with those other people. I don't know why I didn't end up in jail. Only that it must have been the grace of God. Because I was that person. So when I came to you, I still had all that anger and rage in me. It's really a pretty sight too, you know. So anyway, I go about my business raising my children. I took those children home to the woman I hated, my mother, because I needed help. And I went to work. I worked 6 days a week. And on the seventh day, I spent it with my children. I didn't date. I had gentlemen friends who serviced the account, if you know what I mean. I did not want a relationship. Because all four of those men were married. You see, I had some logic in this. You date only married men if you don't want to get involved, and you date numbers of them, then you're surely not going to get involved. There's no chance of it. Well, you do that for a while, you get tired, you know? So I got tired. I called them all together one morning over coffee and said, "I'm not seeing you anymore." And I thought I had it together. So I went to work for a magazine as a research director for a magazine. Now, don't ever trust those people. Because they're liars and they're thieves and a whole lot of other things. But I was suited for that job. And I went to do a story on a no-alcohol bar that had opened up. So I took my mother and we went over there and we had dinner and we had one of their foo-foo drinks with no alcohol in it. And I'm taking notes and going to write all about this business, and I wanted further information. And Mr. Cunning, Baffling, and Powerful walked up to the table. Now, if you've been married, you know who I'm talking about. And he was cute. And guess what? He was a sober member of AA. Aha! Here's the answer to my problems. Right? I always pick these other crazy people. this guy is sober. So he comes and takes me to lunch the next day. We go out that night. 45 days later, we were married. Because even in recovery, alcoholics are impulsive. And did I love him the day we got married? No. I was standing there, and I said, I do. And in the back of my head is the thing, I'm going, I've got an attorney. I've done this before. It's no big deal. Because, see, he wouldn't live with me because I had two small children. And, you know, some AAs go into AA and they work the steps and they get a moral code. And it can mess up your plan. He was messing up my plan. I had no intention of marrying anybody. So, marriage. Now, I'm still angry. I'm still the same person I was before. He's going to AA. He's got a sponsor. He's doing service work. I mean, he's gone all the time. And when he's home, I'm arguing with him because I'm in his face. I like to get in your face. I like to stir it up. Let's get some excitement going. This is not... Alcoholics don't do this by themselves. We like to do it too. So I'd get us going and we'd have an argument and he'd go off to an AA meeting and I'd be there just fuming. Because he had people to talk to, some place to go. So the loving person I was, he'd leave. I would move the furniture around in the living room. I would turn the lights off, jump in bed and wait for him to come home and fall over something. I was a real peach. I really was. This was during my AA wife stage that I like to talk about. I wasn't in a program, but I would go to AA with him. Like I'd come to this kind of a function. I would go when he spoke and sit on the front row. Because, you know, all you women in AA were blonde with big, and I just knew you wanted him. I wasn't sure I did, but I wasn't going to let you take it. So I was there to protect my property. Now, there are a lot of AA wives that think that. That's not unusual for them to think that. So if you got some AA wives sitting around, be careful, ladies, because we're dangerous. So in doing all this, an Al-Anon woman saw me. She must have needed a newcomer because she called me and she said, I want to come take you to an Al-Anon meeting. And I was busy. I was too busy. My mother was there. I had the two kids. I hadn't done the dishes. She said, don't worry about it. I said, I haven't showered today. She said, I'll come over. I'll do your dishes. Your mom can babysit. You take a shower. We'll be ready to go all at the same time. And she came to my house. And I thought, darn, I'm going to have to go to this meeting with this lady just to get her out of the house. So I went to Al-Anon. That was on a Friday night in February 1979. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Now, I want to tell you about that first Al-Anon meeting. I did not hear a word they said. I didn't understand what they were talking about. What I saw was them loving each other and smiling. And I hadn't done that in years. And I just wanted that. If that was all I could get, I would be happy with that. So this lady took me to 4 meetings a week. She was obsessive. And she would pick me up and take me. And then we'd come back and we'd park in the driveway and we'd talk about the meeting. That was good. And in those meetings back then, you heard about sponsorship every single meeting. Now, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what a sponsor did, but I figured I needed one. So we're sitting in the driveway in the car, and I want to ask this lady to be my sponsor. Now, the fear that she might say no never crossed my mind. I didn't think she had the option. I mean, I had no clue what was going on here. The thing was, is just me asking for somebody to help me choked in my throat. Because somewhere I knew that the minute I said that, things were going to change. So I choked it out. We sat there for 20 minutes, and I finally choked it out. And she said she'd love to. Well, she goes home. The next morning, she calls me at 8:30. Now, I'm not working. I'm not getting up till 10, 11. And I thought, how unreasonable of her to call me at 8:30 in the morning. And she proceeded to tell me what I was going to do. She said, you are going to get up, you're going to get dressed, you're going to clean your house, you're going to brush your teeth, and then you're going to call me back. Because, see, I had not been able to do any of those things by the time you got me. I couldn't get up and take a shower on a regular basis. How that husband came home to that, I don't know. But he did. He hung in there with me. And I went to Al-Anon, and she was big into service. And back then, you all have nice elections in your Al-Anon meetings. We didn't have elections. They needed a treasurer. Somebody would say, some sponsor would say, oh, Barbara will do that. That's a good job for her. And then they go, okay, and that's the way it was done. You were appointed a position. So I had lots of service positions. And I went to meetings with her. She took me to meetings for a month. And then she says to me, you know where the meetings are. If you want this, you come get it. And I'm thinking, well, oh, my God, I don't even have a car. I'm going to tell you, you can get to meetings without a car. I went to meetings. Sometimes I'd have to go to the meeting an hour and a half ahead of time to catch a ride. But I'd go in there and I'd set up the meeting, put the literature out, make the coffee, put out the ashtrays because they all smoked back then, including me. And I was ready. I'd read some of the literature, and the first person that walked in, I'd be asking them questions about the literature because I wanted this thing. I wanted it to a certain point. Now, when you get to looking at the steps, and I got to looking at the steps, they got them on the wall, you know. They're real obnoxious about that. They put them at the, so you got to look at them. And this is what I saw. You want me to admit my life's unmanageable? You want me to admit I'm insane? Okay, I can do that. You want me to turn, you want an insane, unmanageable person to turn their will over? I'm thinking, that doesn't make any sense. Then you want me to write my life story, share it with the biggest gossip in town. Then you want me to I might have a few character defects, one or two. And then you want me to go out and make amends to everybody that's ever done me wrong. Then you want me to pray to God, where I don't want to go. And then you want me to go out and get a newcomer and bring him in and teach him how to do this. That's how I interpreted the 12 steps. I was a slow learner. I was in this program 3 years before I ever took step 3. And then I hung around with this pack of women, and they were a pack, and they had decided it was time for me to do a 4-step. Well, every time I went to a meeting, they'd say, have you done it yet? Somebody in the meeting would say, have you done it yet? And I got to the point where, oh, my God, I'm going to have to do this just so they quit. Now, I'm what you call a big book, Al-Anon. I know that's not popular in some parts of town, but that's okay. You'll get over it. They didn't have a lot of the Al-Anon literature when I came in that they have today. And my sponsor did her 4-step out of the big book. And that's how I did it. So So I ran my life through those four columns. And I, you know, I'm a procrastinator. When I get ready to do something, I sit down and do it. And I had a date for my fifth step. The night before, I put my babies to bed. I told my husband what I was going to do. I sat down and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And when I was done that night, early in the morning, I got up, I took a shower, I got in the car, and I drove to my sponsor's house. And I was there for 8 hours talking to her about my life. And, of course, we burned it over the barbecue and had a gallon of ice cream and strawberries. And I went home, and I was totally exhausted, physically and mentally exhausted. And that's what happens to you when you do a thorough fourth and fifth step. I was wiped out. Now, I'm going to jump forward because I got a lot to say, as you might know. Anyway, so my husband gets his job. I'm in the program 4.5 years, and he gets a job offer in Atlanta, Georgia. We're in Southern California. So we move to Atlanta, Georgia. And my sponsor said, Al-Anon's the same, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I go to Al-Anon in Georgia, and I hated every minute of it because y'all didn't do it right. You just didn't. And I told you you didn't do it right. I went to NAVA, to the Thursday night Al-Anon meeting, and I was obnoxious. And finally, I got myself a Georgia sponsor to help me adjust to Georgia. Sweet little lady. And she would say to me, every time we finished talking, now, Barbara, be sweet. The last time I talked to her, she said, Barbara, you are sweet. So it works if you keep telling them they're sweet. Sooner or later, it just happens, I guess. So we rocket along, involved AAs, Al-Anons everywhere, alcoholics sobering up in the house, the whole thing. And I've got a son who's run amok. He likes to break and enter and steal things. Just craziness. Now, these words come back to haunt me later, but I said to my husband, I said, you know, if he'd just take a drink, we'd know what to do with him. And he kept going to jail, and they kept kicking him back to us. I don't know. The judicial system sucks. I mean, he'd do something, they'd send him back. He did a year down Georgia, wherever that place is, in Milledgeville. And then he got in trouble in Tennessee. We moved to Tennessee. And my husband needed a spiritual awakening, so we moved to Tennessee. God directed us to Tennessee, and he did have a spiritual awakening in Tennessee. Things changed for him up there. And it was a good move. And my son continued his little escapades in Tennessee. The problem with Tennessee is the woman in this town, the woman judge, number one, woman judge now. Number two, she had like 10 kids or something. So you couldn't get much past her. And he went up before her, and she let him go off to one of those treatment places. And we did all that, and of course it didn't take. And he went back up before her, and I had a lady come with me to court and hold my hand because they had subpoenaed me to court because I wasn't going. I was done. And he was there, and the judge asked me if I had something to say, and I did. I said to that judge in that open courtroom, shaking, the woman holding my hand, that I think for his well-being and that of the community, he needs to be put away for a very long time. hardest thing I ever did as a mother to that point. And he went off to jail for 2 years, 9 months, and 2 days, and I did not go visit him. I wanted to. Oh, God, I wanted to. But I knew I couldn't. It wasn't good for him, and it sure wasn't good for me. And I would say to my husband, I would really like to go see Travis. And he said, oh, I'll take you. I said, no, you won't. Just because I really want to do it doesn't mean I'll do it. And so I didn't see him till he was released, and I picked him up. And in went this 15-year-old, and out came this 18-year-old, or whatever he was, 19, I don't know. And he was tall. Tall, skinny kid. And he had become a cosmetologist I mean, you could learn a few things if you apply yourself. Anyway. And he had purple hair or something. It's like, and got a perm and it curled, and I don't know. But here he was. My baby boy was home. And I was proud of him. And he did some wonderful things. Wonderful things. And we rocked along and did the AA and Al-Anon thing here in Georgia. And we just love service work and we love this program. We were all about this fellowship. And one day, I was homesick one day from work. And that evening, my husband was to go to a big book study because we had had big book studies in our house for years. And a lot of people in this room have been to my house and to those big book studies. And my husband went off. He had some dinner and he went off to the big book. One of the guys picked him up and we went off to the big book study. The next thing I know, my phone rings. And it's that young man that had taken him to the meeting said, I need to talk to Dennis. And I said, well, he's with you. He's not here. And all of a sudden, panic set into me. And he's talking. I said, I got to go. I got to go find him. So I got in my car and I drove around and I found him laying on the ground, dead. My doctor, the family doctor, told me he had had an aneurysm and he died before he hit the ground. But we didn't know that at the time, and the EMTs come and they work on you forever. It's cruel. That is so cruel to me. And my children were standing there watching this. And we go off, and outside the hospital there's a ton of people. And the next year for me is nothing but a haze. I cannot put any week together for you. Still can't do that. Probably never will be able to. And the other thing that happened, he died on November 3rd. The first week in December, I had to speak. And I did. I made that commitment. And my children were on the front row. And when I finished, don't know what was going on. When I finished, they came up and got me and took me down off the stage. Have no idea what it was like. None. When somebody dies, the first year is the hardest. Once you go through a season, things get better. That is a lie. I'm here to tell you the truth. That first year, you're in shock, you're in a daze, you just kind of go through life. The second year, you wake up and go, oh my God, I'm here. What am I going to do now? I had a plan. God, I had a plan. Now what am I going to do? Well, I wanted to date. Nobody in AA is going to date me. I don't know any other men but AA men. It was awful. And I'm going to Al-Anon meetings, and my friend Baron here, he was single, him and I would go do things together just because we didn't have anybody else to go with. Finally, he hooks up with his beautiful wife, and now I'm still out here flopping around. So I did what everybody does in this new age. I went on the internet. And I met and I married a very nice man who's a widower. And we're happy together. And he's not an alcoholic. He does like to control things. I think, if anything, he's a prospective Al-Anon. But please do not 12-step him. He does the cooking. He goes to the grocery store. He manages the money. I just love it. All I got to do is clean the toilet. You know, I can handle that. And he's got 4 kids and I got 2 kids. And together we have 5 grandchildren. Now, do all his kids like me? No. Do I like all of them? No. My kids are very polite and loving and kind to him. More so than his are. Isn't that the way it works out? But my oldest son gets married. He marries a woman that I met in my home because she came over to a meeting and she was bat crazy. Oh, my God. I don't know how... That's her over here. Bat crazy's over here. But he met her and he marries her and they buy a house and they gave me a wonderful grandson. He is the love of my life. There isn't anything that he wants that I won't give him if I can. He will be spoiled rotten if I have anything to do with it. That other young man got married, got a good job, worked his way up, got a good job. Has a little problem with alcohol. Now, how did that happen? You know, this is a family disease. And if you have children, I don't care if you're sober or not, they're affected. This, just because you quit drinking, doesn't mean alcoholism's not alive and well in that house. Because it is. Because we're different people. We look at life differently. So, you know, you'd think... Husband was sober 28 years when he died. I've been in the program over 30 years. You would think, and he saw people get sober in the house. He went to more AA meetings when he was young than most AAs went to. Information's not enough. Just because they grow up in a sober household doesn't mean they're not going to have alcoholism. So that young man lost that job, lost that wife, lost that house. And I had to stand and watch that and do nothing because I can't help my baby. You can help my baby. I can't. And I talked to my sponsor. My sponsor's in Dallas, Texas, and she has 7 children. She married a man with 6 kids. I thought she was crazy when she did that. And then they had one together, so they had 7 children. And this is the lady I go to talk to that keeps me spiritually centered so I can stay away and let you do what you got to do for him and him do what he's got to do. Now, there are certain things that I can do, but every time I do something, before I do it, I talk to her. And she has to okay it or I don't do it. Because I know my best thinking will kill him. Does it hurt? Yes. For the last 6 months, at least once a week, I break out in hives. If you've ever broken out in hives, you know how painful that is. But that's how I react to his alcoholism. He's sober today, and he's here today. And I thank AA for that. Not me, not his stepfather, not my Al-Anon meetings. Today, I love people. I care about people. And not just my family. There's lots of people in here I care about. My grandson's godmother's here. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that he has a godmother that is in this fellowship and that has a spiritual life. You have given me everything I have today. And I'm grateful for that. The other thing I want to say about AA, and I'm really serious about this, I consider Alcoholics Anonymous the spiritual parent of Al-Anon. And that we need to remember that. And when an AA talks to you, smile. Open up your arms and hearts. We are not always AA friendly. And that's upsetting to me. Because without them, we would have nothing. Of course, 50% of them would be dead, but... So thank you so much for spending this time with me and listening to me babble on. Thank you for teaching me about God. Thank you for teaching me how to love somebody. Thank you for teaching me that it's okay to be me. Earlier, I was trying to arrange a sponsor for John. So the controlling part of me is still here. I will meddle when I can. But I'm also there for you. And I do want to talk about my mother briefly. That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
I have a job to do. Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this.
I know what it is.
Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this.
I know what it is.
Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this.
I know what it is.
Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. and I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there, and I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends, and the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it, and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you." And she heard it and she acknowledged it. And for that, I'm grateful. You people gave me that relationship. I can't do those kind of relationships on my own. I'm not equipped. I'm not equipped to do that. With you and God, I can do anything. I love you. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you. That was fabulous. On behalf of the Atlanta Roundup and the committee, we want to thank you and present you with this. Okay, we're going to end in the usual fashion with the Lord's Prayer, and then we'll be going across the hall.
That woman that I said I hated had cancer. She had lung cancer, and I brought her to my house and took care of her the last 2 months of her life. I was there with her when she died. There was a sober member of AA there to give her her medication. Now, there's nothing better than to have an AA give somebody morphine, you know? Because I knew that if it was left to me, I would have done the merciful thing in my mind. And I couldn't do that. So I had somebody else do that for me. And she died there. And I loved my mother when she died. Was she nice to me? Not always. But I had made my amends. And the last thing I said to her before she passed was, "Mama, I love you."